Welcome to the Making After School podcast, the link between research, practice, and theory for those who are interested in the activities youth are engaged with during non-school hours. The Making After School Crew podcast is produced by Case for Kids, the Division of Harris County Department of Education, and I'm your host, Mike Wilson.
Today is part one of a two-part episode series focusing on how out-of-school time programs can create a multicultural sensitive environment.
The demographics of the country is rapidly changing. Within the last 20 years, Texas has seen a shift from the Anglo majority to a large Latino population. According to Alexis Ura and Connie Jen, Hispanics are expected to become the largest population group in Texas as soon as 2020. These new population estimates were recently released by the U.S. Census Bureau. Once this year's census is complete, it is projected to show an increase in the diversity of this country as well as in the state of Texas. And while Hispanics' numbers are growing the most, the state's Asian community is growing the fastest. Although the number of Black Texans continue to grow, their share of the state population has remained mostly stagnant in recent years, and the Anglo population has started to decline. So today's topic is how to embrace multiculturalism in your community. To discuss this with me, as well as other issues, is my guest, Roberto Harmon. Roberto, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well, Mike. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you for being able to join us. Roberto is an educational leader who strives to shape school cultures by reinforcing the core values of citizenship, scholarship, and collaboration. He is the co-founder of the Multicultural Classroom, an endeavor aimed to address the national issue of effective teaching in multicultural and multilingual classrooms and communities. He and his wife, Lorena, are activists, educators, writers, speakers, trainers, and parents. Throughout the years, they have made an impact in the lives of many with their passionate leadership and creative talents to create and inspire cultural diversity in communities across the state. Roberto, again, welcome to the Making After School Cool podcast.
Thank you.
As an educator, how are you adjusting to the start of the school year?
Yeah, it's been a fascinating school year thus far, and certainly the most unique school year that likely most, if not all, educators are encountering. Just adjusting week by week, day by day. The theme for our school this year at Headwater School, where I serve as director of the middle school, is advocating for grace. And so that's something that we're talking about constantly, and understanding that this school year is presenting us with tons of new challenges, and certainly new opportunities also. And so we want to come into that with good energy and openness to make a lot of adjustments along the way, but also just being honest about the challenges that we're facing, and recognizing that we don't have all the answers. And so there's going to be a lot of trying on different strategies. Some of the things we implement will work well. Some of the things we implement might not work as well. But this is going to be a year in which we're going to have to really be united in terms of trying to maximize the learning potential for our students.
Well, it sounds like a really good plan to get everything started and sort of being honest with what we're having to deal with and what we have to face. So I think that's a really good approach for educators and students alike. My first question is, what motivated you and your wife to create the Multicultural Classroom?
Yeah, so we created the Multicultural Classroom in 2015. And really what motivated us was reflecting on our years of experience, combined years of experience working in public schools, private schools, traditional public, charter, parochial schools, working with pre-K 3 through 12th grade, and considering the different experiences that we've had, the different things that we've seen surface in the various settings, the needs that educators have that we feel we could respond to given the different settings and different experiences that we've had. So we wanted to try to offer our insight, our voice, lift up the voices of others, especially underrepresented groups. But also, we have the credentials to back up what we're presenting in our approach. And so, you know, sometimes what I have found is our society has reinforced messages to us as people of color that can be extremely dangerous in terms of how we view ourselves and how we view our potential and even our credentials. And so even when we have all of that, sometimes we doubt ourselves, our reach, our abilities. And, you know, we wanted to kind of work past that, but also model for others that, you know, they're just as capable of bringing their talents to the forefront and working in ways to support others. And in this case, obviously, we're talking about education for the most part. And how is it that we can have a greater impact in the classrooms all across the board, regardless if the audience in front of us are students of color or not? How can we have the most impact with students that we serve so that we can broaden their perspective, challenge and grow them to lean into their educational journey with a mindset to be anti-bias, anti-racist learners and educators? And so we're just taking our experiences and sharing them with others and serving others in that way.
Well, we really appreciate the things that you're doing, and I visited the multicultural classroom, and I'm impressed with the content that you have available there. This brings me to my next question. Dealing with race and multicultural topics can be a sensitive subject. What are some types of tips you can give to youth servicing institutions for helping to create a welcoming space for their students, especially those with a variety of backgrounds?
That's a great question. Thanks for asking that. I'd say, first of all, I want to share that in the past, when I was younger, I used to work for an after-school program. Actually, I've worked for at least a couple, maybe two or three, back in Lawrence, Massachusetts, where I'm from. And so when I was young, I used to work in after-school programs, and I believe there's great opportunity to introduce things in the after-school setting that either get reinforced there. Maybe they're introduced first to school and get reinforced there, but in many cases, they're not even introduced in the school settings. And so in the after-school program, there's an opportunity to offer education that perhaps our young people aren't receiving in their schools. And so, you know, when I reflect on my younger self, my 18-year-old, 19-year-old self working in those type of settings, you know, there were things that I was doing that perhaps I wasn't fully conscious of, but then there were other things that I was very conscious of. And one way that I was introducing it is through the arts, through spoken word, through rap music, sharing content with the kids, but also encouraging their passion for music and the arts, and helping them cultivate their skills in a way that helps them bring forward a message, and a message that's grounded in some of this content that we're impacting in terms of relevant content that deals with multiculturalism, diversity, dismantling racist systems, so on and so forth, as opposed to allowing them to think that they have to be, you know, like the artists that they often see projected through the media that are reinforcing messages that in many cases are harmful to our communities. And so that's one way to do it, is to through writing, developing writing, offering times to do writing workshops in the after-school settings, but also, and more importantly, for staff members, I think you have to start by developing common language, common understanding, offering some baseline training so folks are on the same page in terms of the things that they're talking about, some ways to approach it, and having a team approach to that. And so you want to be able to practice these things with the team before you roll it out with the young people. And then you also don't want the one-off situations. You don't want one-off situations where you have, you know, hey, there's only one or two staff members doing this, but, you know, if you're grouped over here with these staff members, you never hear about this content. And so you want to be able to train your folks to try on the very exercises that you would introduce the young people to. But again, I think it's extremely important to establish some common language and common understanding in regards to the approach and the content.
I know you do staff development for teachers and other professionals. And so in your opinion, what type of training do you think after school staff need to address issues of social justice, diversity, and multiculturalism?
You know, I like to look at things in terms of individual cases. And so understanding the program, understanding what they're already doing, you know, assessing what they're not doing or, you know, where there is opportunity to introduce something new. You know, thinking about the makeup of the population and, you know, what needs does this particular population have? And so I would want to look at some of those pieces with, you know, program director or somebody in one of those lead positions. But then, you know, I would consider implementing some ongoing work with staff. So, for example, one thing that I'm intentional about doing with the staff that I lead is making sure we have a regular schedule for our ABAR meetings, our anti-bias, anti-racist trainings. And, you know, while there's so much that we need to do and so much that we can do, you want to be strategic about how you manage that time. So even when we have little time to work some of this stuff out or not as much time as I would like, then there's still opportunities to structure things in a way where you could maximize the time that you do have and the potential to engage your staff in some deep reflection, some critical thinking, some strategizing. And so that's one piece, is considering your meeting times and making a commitment to intentional trainings centered around anti-bias, anti-racist approach, and also delivering them in digestible chunks. Sometimes what happens in organizations is you might get really inspired and then you just want to go out there and, you know, solve the world's problems. But then you're throwing too much to the people and it's just like it could weigh folks down. So you want to be able to deliver it in digestible chunks and leave room for people to share what it is they're processing, how it is they're responding to it, identify some next steps as individuals, but also what are the next steps for us as a collective? So what are the next steps for the organization? So those are some of the things that I would be considering if I were leading the after school program. And those are some things that I think all after school programs can consider. You know, how are we being are we being intentional around this type of work? If so, how are we being intentional? And then again, where is their room for us to develop? Where is there room for us to grow? You know, what are two or three things that we want to focus on right now?
I think those are some excellent suggestions. And I do like the fact that, you know, your approach is ongoing, working it down into small pieces, and then allow for reflection and feedback for the participants that are participating in the training. Let me ask you, because most after-school programs are usually set either school-based or in local communities. Should these programs involve parents in these types of discussions?
Absolutely. Absolutely. They'd have to think about their strategy for doing so. Because that, I think some of that, how you go about doing it will depend on your resources and your capacity to work with the parent community. Nonetheless, I think there are opportunities to do something, however said organization defines that. So for example, one simple way I like to do it, and I think any organization could do it, is through working in content into their staff newsletter. And it might be simple stuff. This week I read this article and I've been reflecting on XYZ. It has me thinking how it is that this applies to us as an organization. Sometimes I do that in my newsletter. Other ways, what are some other ways? Parent education workshops. There are after school programs that offer that. Certainly there are some that don't. But for the ones that do, or the ones that have the capacity to offer parent education workshops, then I think that is worth exploring. Doesn't mean that this is going to be a weekly event. It might be something you do once a month. It might be something you do quarterly. Maybe it's something you just do twice a year. But I think it's good practice to invite parents into the fold beyond the newsletter. Maybe it's not a parent education workshop. Maybe it's, I got the Boys and Girls Club in Lawrence. They'll have writing conferences. And the writing conferences, especially when we started with focus, it was student conferences. But, you know, as things grew, then started considering like, hey, you know, maybe we should invite parents to also participate in this writing conference. And so that could be a way of doing it. You know, you set your theme for the conference. You know, this is a conference in which our young people and parents can participate, our families can participate. And I think that's a great way of getting parents involved, letting them go through the prompts that we would bring our young people through, giving them room to share. So I recall when I worked at the Gilmette Middle School as assistant principal in Lawrence, Massachusetts, we had a program that I offered. It was an after-school program working in conjunction with Elevated Thought, which is an arts program. And so the kids focused on developing their visual arts, but it was also accompanied by some writing, some poetry. And at the end of the program, we had an event in which we invited the families to join us for a meal. We did a gallery walk of the artwork, and then there was an open mic in which our young people shared the work. And so during that open mic time, you could also invite parents to share. And it's a powerful thing when you have the child sharing, but then the parents also sharing their work. It's just a powerful thing for the family. It's a powerful thing for the program. And it's also a way to build community. So those are a couple simple ways that come to mind right now. Certainly, you know, there's other ideas that we could explore.
Well, you actually brought up a lot of great ideas, and that sort of brings me up to my next question. Currently, you see a large amount of media coverage regarding social and racial injustice. Plus, they see celebrities and professional athletes expressing their views on the topic. As a result, many kids may have many questions, but they may not have the vocabulary to express their thoughts or the cognitive abilities to clearly understand what's going on. How can after-school programs provide activities which help kids understand they have a voice regarding how to solve some of these problems?
You know, this is, we're living in some turbulent times, and it's a different day and age in terms of the amount of information that our young people have, and, well, all people really, but, you know, we're thinking about the youngsters, talking about the youngsters, how quickly they're able to access it, whether it's accurate or not. And so I think there are some things to consider in regards to how we can support our young people. One thing is helping them understand all the tools that are out there, but also helping them learn to vet their sources so they understand which sources are reliable and which are not. We also have to give them room to share their individual experiences, and for us to understand that we could be in the same community and our experiences may vary. And so there should be room for that, for the fact that we may experience things a little differently. That being said, I think that it's a good practice for us to teach our young people how to be aware, how to grow their awareness in regards to things that are happening in their particular communities, and also, you know, nationwide and globally. Teaching them to build their awareness, teaching them to develop their analytical skills, so that they could take a piece of information and then draw their conclusions, their own conclusions, and then understanding how to support them in responding to some of these weighty issues. So developing their advocacy skills, modeling the example for them, also identifying some individuals who serve and lead well in those areas of advocacy. I think our young people, one of the things I like to tell young people is that their voice matters. I want to hear your voice matters. And I think it's an important message. And I also think that has to be accompanied by guiding them to understand how to best use their voice and how to leverage their advocacy and power. So, you know, teaching them to be able to reach out to lawmakers and others who are in decision-making positions, to write a letter advocating for a particular matter, addressing a particular issue, sharing their concerns, to make phone calls to, you know, senator's office or their congressman that represents the district, so on and so forth. Just teaching our young folks that the community is ours, and so we should feel empowered to voice ourselves, to express our concerns, to share our approval or disapproval of certain matters. And I think it's important for us to help them learn that at an early age, so that they don't, as they get older, if they've learned this at an early age, then that they feel encouraged, but also that they feel that sense of responsibility to be active, to respond, to voice themselves, not just on their own behalf, but on behalf of their community.
And that kind of goes full circle in regards to what you said earlier, that the staff needs training and they need to be able to have the skills themselves on the professional level so that they can guide students in doing some of these endeavors that you spoke of. And so you can encourage the students to use appropriate vocabulary, writing skills, do research, and also identify who are the appropriate parties that their concerns need to be addressed.
This concludes part one of my interview with Roberto Harmon regarding developing a multicultural sensitive environment in after-school programs. Please join us for part two as we continue this discussion, as well as bring you information that is relevant to the out-of-school time field.
Making after-school cool.